Rock and roll. I got Edward Brown on the Capital Racer Show. How are you doing, my friend?
I am doing excellent. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for asking, man. Just went on your radio show not too long ago, man. This is going to be fun. For the audience that has never met Edward Brown, tell us a little bit about your background, man.
So I have a bachelor's degree in accounting and a master's degree in tax. And I started my accounting and tax practice back in 1983. Got hooked up with a gentleman who I always loved investments. So he helped me get my insurance license and I got my investment license. Eventually got my real estate license. So I kind of the whole gambit. And it was really kind of interesting because we had doing the income tax work for people eventually led to, people need to invest their IRAs. And so I'd help them invest the IRAs. And back then we'd invest in stocks, bonds, mutual funds, limited partnerships, and that sort of thing. And then back in 1991, I ended up buying some discounted notes. That's actually my first introduction into that. And eventually I was doing hard money real estate loans. I got together with a different partner back in 93. And then we had our own hard money loan business for a number of years. Unfortunately, we got caught up in the land problems in 2008.
Okay.
And so then it kind of morphed into what I'm doing now, which is helping Pacific Private Money raise money for their four different funds. But it kind of interesting enough, I still, I write a bunch of articles, got two radio shows. Mm-hmm. And then I've also been an expert witness, which is kind of cool.
All right. So tell me about these four funds that you are involved with. What is your role? Are you the principal? Are you participating in some other capacity?
So on one of the funds, I'm one of the managers, but on the other funds, and including this one, I'm investor relations. So what had happened was at Pacific Private Money, originally we just did one-off deals where we would raise, a borrower would come and say, I need $600,000 on a $1 million house. I need to close it in 10 days. I got an 800 FICO score. I mean, everything was really, really good. And the principal, Mark Honf, at the time was just a broker. So he would get the borrower to clamp in and say, okay, yes, I'm going to work with you. But now Mark had 10 days to raise the 600,000 to get the deal done. So he would blast out an email to, like 50 of his clients. And maybe, let's say 20 minutes, four or five people would respond and say, wow, this is a pretty good deal. I'd like to have it. And it's like, okay. So one guy gets it and the other four people are told, sorry, you're too late.
Fantastic strategy.
Well, and the thing is, investor myself, that was going on with me too, where I was working with other brokers. And I remember answering an email in 17 seconds and I was told I was too late. After a while, you start to get upset and say, stop sending me deals. So Pacific Private Money was experiencing the same thing where they were having a bunch of people saying, you know what, stop sending me deals unless you're going to give me at least a day or an hour or whatever to look at these things. So Mark came to me and said, I'd like to start a fund. And at first I was going, oh, why do you want to start a fund? Because I always like doing individual deeds of trust. And for 3 years between 2010 and 2013, he and I were doing our radio show, never doing any business together, just doing the radio show. But he knew I knew a lot about funds. So he said, I'd like to start this fund. And here's the reason why. This way the fund can go ahead, collect the money from the investors. It's almost like a mutual fund. And then the fund goes ahead and makes the loan. And I said, actually, that's a pretty good reason, compelling reason to start a fund. I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll help you as long as I can have input, like how are your interests aligned with the investors? And what is the exit strategy? Like if somebody wants to get out, the hold period. And originally he wanted it to be 5 years. I said, that's too long. I said, make it 2 years. Okay. So he made it 2 years. Eventually, after about a year or so, he lowered it down to a year. And that was our first fund. And then what happened was, imagine if you have a loan that you need to fund. Again, let's go back to that $600,000 loan. What happens if the fund itself has $400,000 and needs the other $200,000? What he did was he got a bank line of credit to go ahead and fund that gap. And then when either loans paid off or new investors came in, he'd pay down the line. And everything was working fine. He had a $2 million line of credit. And then one day the bank said, hey, yeah, this has been fun. You're great clients, but we're just not going to be doing this anymore. Pay us off by the end of December. And I think that was, if I'm not mistaken, 2017 or 18. And Mark said, okay, well, I got to do that. But shoot, what do? I need this line of credit. So he went to his attorneys and he said, can I start a fund just to be like a warehouse line of credit? And they said, sure. So he started this fund called the Freedom Fund, where it's supposed to be just short-term warehouse line type money to fund loans. But at the same time, he got attraction from three or four other potential buyers, like big Wall Street type companies who love the loans that we do, because we're one of the few lenders licensed in California to do owner-occupied consumer bridge loans. There's only a handful of us because it's a pretty expensive space, barrier of entry. So what he did was he got these contracts with these, I call them Wall Street buyers. They're not exactly Wall Street, but it's close enough. They're large institutions. And so he'll make loans and then he'll quickly sell them to Wall Street. That fund took off.
Interesting.
Because what we ended up doing was effectively eliminating the one-year hold. The documents say that it's a one-year hold, but there's no penalty for early withdrawal. So we asked people to just give us 30 days notice when they want to get out. So imagine a fund where you're earning any, either 7, 8, or 9%, depending upon how much money you put in, and you can get out with a 30-day notice. I don't know any other fund in the country where that has that liquidity and that conservativeness, because again, all we're doing is originating notes, and then we're selling them to Wall Street, get the money back, put it on the conveyor belt, and do it again. So we grew that fund in, again, I think it was December 2018. So it just takes 6 months or so to start gaining traction. We've got $42 million in that fund alone.
So I'm assuming that all of these are going to be, or that were or are, 506C, Regulation D, 506C exemptions.
Yep.
Okay. Just wanted to verify that. So how big were you setting these funds up in the beginning? How big are they now?
Originally, they were going to be $50 million funds. And now we're set the cap at 150, but then you can always kind of change that also.
What do you mean you can change that? You mean on new funds or?
No, you basically just kind of do an amendment, I think it is, where you just raise the cap. And the funny thing is the fund that I'm one of the managers of is a small fund. It's only got about $4 million in it. And we're very specialized. We buy discounted loans primarily in the state of Texas, but we can go elsewhere with it. And that just produces a 7.5% return. Again, no hold. And then our fourth fund is a construction loan fund. There's still a big need in primarily in California for construction loans.
Fascinating. Okay. So these $50 million funds, you mentioned something. It sounds a lot like I had this guy named Lance Peterson that used to do funds. You know him?
Yeah, I know him from
he used to be Fairway. With Verivest.
Yeah.
And he used to be with Fairway too.
Fairway,
so he told me this. I'm kind of curious about this. We didn't explore this in great depth. You mentioned a line of credit as a fund, which is interesting, but he actually used to talk about, or at least on his show that I did with him, he talked about using the actual debt and loans that he was borrowing against as cross collateralization to get a line of equity on the fund. Talking about, or is that something?
No, it's a little different, because what he's talking about is actually leveraging the fund itself.
Yes.
Which is different. So our main fund, the first one we started, is unleveraged. So what we did was we started like this other fund, which strictly does loans to sell to Wall Street. But when we previously used the line of credit outside to go ahead and fund these loans in our main fund, we still considered it unleveraged because it was so temporary that it was just quite a quick in and out. So it's a little different, because a lot of funds are set up to be specifically long-term debt, because they might have, let's say, up to 40% leverage in there, and then they can get bank loans at, let's say, 5%, and they'll leverage that because they'll be earning 8, 9, 10%, and that's how they enhance their yield. But we don't enhance our yield.
Okay, and then for the listeners that are curious about starting their own fund, do you recommend any particular lawyers or people that they should talk to before launching a fund?
Jirasi in Los Angeles seems to be the main player in this space. Almost every major fund uses Jirasi Law Firm, G-E-R-A-C-I.
Okay, and then talk to me about this, because a lot of people are not aware that guys like Lance Peterson exist that can be what some people refer to as fund architecture consultants, or in other words, not lawyers, but people that can give people fund advice before.
Correct.
Because you talk to a lawyer and they'll be like, yeah, man, I'll take your money and write up all these docs and protect your investors and protect you, but they won't be able to give you some really good business advice before launching your fund, or whether or not you're even qualified or able to successfully launch a fund, they won't give you that kind of advice.
Yeah. So I actually sort of was like that for Mark Hanf at Pacific Private Money for our first fund. And I don't know everything, but I had been pretty well experienced as someone who sold investments to investors since the 80s. So I kind of knew what investors were looking for. And that's, again, one of the reasons it's like, I put to him, hey, listen, I'll help you with your fund, but I want to protect the investors. So how are your interests aligned? So making sure that the investors get a preferred return and then your profits come at the end. And if there's any redemption request, they have to get honored before you put out another loan, little things like that. So there's certain advice, and Lance knows quite a lot. And I don't compete with him because I don't like sell my services to anybody. And we used Lance for our stuff. And it's interesting because a lot of funds still have either a 5-year or 2-year, 3-year lockup. And the reason I think that they have that is they're fearful that people are there's going to be a run on the bank. But what we found, and Mark specifically, when we had a 2-year hold originally, he realized everyone was happy with the fund. Nobody was exiting. So he said, you know what, I'm going to make it more attractive to people. And they just have to stay in for 1 year. And a year goes by really fast. So it's easier to raise capital when you can have a very short fuse on the holding period. And the reality is most people are not going to put in their redemptions. Obviously, some people will. Their daughter gets married. They want to buy a house, et cetera, et cetera. But for the most part, if you're paying very close to what you're supposed to be paying or what you purport to pay, most people are going to keep the money in the fund. So it's sort of a mirage, so to speak, because you could say, oh, yeah, we'll redeem you. And again, in our case, we do redeem people within 30 days on our other fund. And we've actually redeemed people in as quickly as a week because our loans turn over so quickly that we're able to quickly pay people back. And you got to do what you say you're going to do. But again, even if in our original fund, if we had said, no hold, just 30 days notice, we probably still wouldn't have hardly any redemptions because these alternative investments pay so much higher than your typical stocks, bonds, et cetera, mm-hmm. without the fluctuation of principal. That's to me, that's as a high net worth individual investor myself, my big thing is don't lose my principal. I'll accept the little change in the interest rate because the economy changes. Now interest rates are going up. And so now we're doing loans at higher rates. But when interest rates had dropped, we had to drop our rates too to be competitive. Because that's mostly what it is. It's more of a competitive market of the cost of money. So the interesting thing, like in California, there's so much money here that even if interest rates were going up, if investors were clamoring and competing for loans, those interest rates to the investors were not going up. Because in order to snag a loan, the broker basically is going to have to do it at a reasonable price or else they're just going to get outdone. Which kind of brings me to an interesting thing I wanted to mention to you about. Some of these fix and flip lenders, we don't really do fix and flip. Our construction loan fund is kind of like that, but there are a lot of fix and flip lenders out there. And I can't believe the deals that they give these borrowers, because to me, they seem fairly risky. They'll give them 7% interest rate and a half a point and 95% loan to value. And it's like, holy smokes. Yeah, if real estate keeps going up, then that's not a big problem. But like right now, our consumer owner occupied loans are being done at between 9.75% and 9.875% with 1.5 to 2 points on an 11-month bridge loan, which is a lot different. And we're generally going to stay below 70%.
Okay, LTV. Cool. Yeah. So a lot of the listeners that are tuning in are familiar with syndications. They're commercial real estate syndicators for the most part, with some notes and some oil and gas guys that listen in as well. And when they're contemplating starting a fund, typically the reason that they're doing this is because a one-off syndication or a single asset syndication is a little bit more volatile in terms of the return for the investor. So if you have one deal and you do like 5 deals a year, some deals may do really well, like at 35% IRR or more, and some may do not so good at 16%. So the reason that some commercial real estate syndicators will start a fund is to kind of smooth out that volatility. And I'm very curious about, as we talk about business fund structures, typically you can either go blind pool fund, you can do a series LLC, like Lance talks about sometimes, where you have one Master LLC, and that fund or that LLC launches a fund every quarter or however often. And then you have like a fund that may be, or a syndication that may be semi-specific, where it's kind of like for a portfolio. But the difference between a syndication and a fund is that you attach a business model instead of an asset to a fund. Now, what are some of the business models that you are currently using on your funds? You mentioned you have four.
Yeah, we have four different funds. They're distinct. Okay, so our main fund has been the typical hard money real estate loan fund.
For single family fix and flips.
Not so much fix and flip. It could be owner occupied. It could be some commercial, mostly residential, primarily in California. There might be a few outside. And that was kind of our mainstay fund.
So let's explain that to me a little bit. So you're giving hard money for a buy and hold?
Yeah. So typically, there's usually no prepayment penalty. On owner-occupied, there can't be any prepayment penalty by law. So we're giving loans to people. Usually it's speed. That's why people are coming to us. Mm-hmm. Or there may be some weird glitch in their credit report.
They're buying owner-occupied rental properties?
Owner-occupied with consumer. Speed. Consumer. Because let's say you own a house.
And then they can refinance.
Exactly. So you own house A. You want to make an aggressive offer on house B. And you only have so much of a down payment, or maybe you have no down payment, but you have so much equity in house A that you want to be able to borrow 100% of the price of B, and we'll lend that to you. So we had a situation, it's kind of interesting, just before COVID, I had a situation where this couple owned a house in Larkspur, California. House had a lot of equity. They wanted to increase the size of their house by moving to Nevada, which is a little bit lower end, but they had young kids and they wanted a bigger house. They had so much equity in their Larkspur house that when they wanted to buy this house in Nevada for $2 million, it was $2,075,000 was the asking price. And their income was great, lots of high FICO. They only had maybe a couple hundred thousand dollars in the bank. He was a contractor, she was a consultant making $1 million a year. At the time, the real estate market was, and it's still fairly hot. That's cooled down a bit, but it was really pretty hot back then. I told the borrowers, I said, listen, everything is so good here. I'll lend you the entire $2,075,000. You don't have to put any down payment down. And we'll give you an 11-month bridge loan. I want to cross. So it will be a first mortgage on Novato and a second on Larkspur. And interestingly enough, the husband said, because you're, oh, and by the way, we're going to close this deal in 9 days because I've got a full package from your broker. So a husband went to the seller of the house and he said, you know what? I want to make an aggressive offer. And he said, I want to offer $2 million flat. He said, I know people are going to overbid on this property, but I want a discount because I'm going to close quickly. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at this and going, okay, great. I just wasted my time. There's no way the seller's going to take this offer.
Sometimes they do.
And this is what his offer was. He said, I'm putting up, I think it was $50,000 or $25,000 non-refundable. I'm going to close this deal in 9 days, but I want to buy it for $2 million. And if I don't close in 9 days, then you get to keep my deposit and sell it to the next person. And the seller said, okay, that sounds good to us. Mm-hmm. Well, we did close the deal in 9 days. So our borrower, if you think about it, we did not charge him $75,000 in points. He actually saved money by using hard money. And then as soon as they moved, which they only had to move once, he was able to use their cash to fix up the Larkspur house to get a higher price, sold that house, and paid us off.
Fascinating. Very interesting. Okay, so that's one model where you're using bridge debt or bridge loans or soft money or even hard money loans for houses. What are some of the other business models that you use in your funds?
So we've got one fund that's strictly a construction loan fund. So
what kind of construction?
Primarily, it's going to be built up from the ground up.
So for houses?
Mostly for houses, yeah. Okay. Could be apartments, but those kind of people usually don't need our kind of money. So it's going to be a builder, maybe doing spec homes or build to suit type of thing. Then again, we've got this one fund that buys just strictly discounted mortgages.
I think I know somebody that's actually looking to build houses that could probably use your money. I'll make that connection afterwards. All right. So you have a construction fund. And then what about fund number three?
That's that Freedom Fund, the one we're originating notes and then selling them to Wall Street.
You're originating notes.
Yep.
So what kind of notes are you doing? Just typical mortgages?
They're going to be very similar to that one that I mentioned in the Vado Larkspur. where we're funding it and then we're selling it to Wall Street. It's a typical bridge loan that they like. A few years ago, we put together a $100 million offering for them. And I think we were the first ones to use blockchain, which kind of goes beyond my pay grade.
Fascinating.
Yeah. The thing that's kind of cool about it is that these borrowers, they don't want to pay our interest rate. They don't have to pay our interest rate. They'll either sell their house or they'll refinance. So these loans generally only stay on the books 4 to 6 months. So what happens is that when the loans in the Freedom Fund get paid off, now Wall Street's got that money and they come back to us and they say, we need more loans to backfill that fund.
And they buy these loans knowing that they're going to be very short term.
Yeah. And so if the loans are going to be uber short, like a month, we won't even put it on the table to them. So we do loans where we know, or let's put it this way, we're confident that we're going to get paid off in about a month. But the reason we do it is because we earn the points. So even though there's no prepayment penalty, your annualized rate of return on that is quite high. You know, if you're charging 2 points, get paid off in a month. That's really high. In fact, we did one loan. This is back in, I think, 2018, where this poor, I kind of felt sorry for this lady. She was working with one of the large institutions, a very well-known bank, let's put it that way. And she was buying her house and she had 3 months to close. She didn't need us. She, you know, everything was perfect for her. She had a non-refundable deposit and she had to close by a certain time. She was about 2 weeks away from her contract ending for the purchase of the house. And the bank was still dragging its heels.
Yeah.
And she realized, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose my money. I'm going to lose my dream house. And so she came to us and she said, listen, I can't risk because I asked the bank, are you absolutely for sure going to fund by X date? And of course they said, well, gee, we're not sure. Maybe, maybe yes, maybe no. Waiting on some stupid situation with their underwriters. Who knows? She said, you know what? Unfortunately, I'm going to have to borrow from you guys knowing for sure you will get this deal done in a week. And then whenever the bank funds, they'll fund. And so this lady did the loan with us. 1 week later, the bank finally came through. So we got paid off in a week and, you know, we saved the day, but you know, so it's sort of a love-hate relationship, you know, yeah. They love that we can come through because we've never left anybody at the altar.
That's a good reputation to have. All right. So, and then the last fund is that the Pacific, what is it called?
So the Southwest Fund, the one that the discounted notes?
Whatever the fourth one is.
Okay. So we have our main first fund that we do that does typical hard money loans. Then we have our construction loan called North Star. We have the Freedom Fund, which is this really short-term one that just quickly sells to Wall Street. And then we have the discounted loan fund. Those are the four funds.
And then the discounted loan fund, what is that? What do you tell me about that?
So primarily we're buying discounted. In fact, it's really specialized at this point. We may expand, but we're buying discounted seller carryback notes primarily in Texas. Yeah. So the problem is finding the notes, but when we find the notes, they're smoking hot because we negotiate pretty well on it. So our average loan to value is about, I think the average loan to value is 44%. Our average investment to value is about 29%. So imagine, you know, on a $100,000 house in Texas, we're only into it for $29,000 and we're producing a high enough return to give the clients a flat 7.5% return.
Okay, very cool. So tell me about the different risk profiles associated. If I have $100,000 or I have some number of money that I want to invest in your funds, how do I decide which one is going to fit my specific risk profile?
Gotcha. Okay. So our main hard money real estate loan fund is right now paying a preferred return of 6% plus half the profits. Half the profits right now are yielding only about roughly 0.25%. So we haven't been pushing that fund too much. Our Freedom Fund, the one where we do the loans and sell them to Wall Street, that one pays either 7%, 8%, or 9%. But here's the catch. You got to have a minimum $250,000. Mm-hmm. So $250,000 gets you 7%, $500,000 gets you 8%, a million or more gets you 9%. Yeah. There was this one guy who came to us. He said he watched us for 2 years just to make sure we were legit. Uh-huh. And he decided, he says, okay, I've done enough homework. I know you guys are legit. He says, I want to meet you in person because I want to invest $1 million. Wow. Right off the bat, $1 million. That's pretty good. So I meet with him. We sit and talk. He wrote a check right on the spot for $3 million. And then a week later, he called. He hadn't even gotten his first check. He said, you know what? I really like the concept of this fund. I think I'll add another million to it.
He was probably studying you for a long time.
Yes, he was. Yeah. So that fund, again, that's, I'll call it the catch. The catch is you got to have at least 250,000. But again, there's no hold. You just give us 30 days notice and you get either 7, 8, or 9%.
So I want to talk about something real quick here, because I had Vinny Chopra come on and he's like, the way that I get my investors to open up their wallet a little bit more is by saying, hey, we're going to set up this fund in a specific way so that depending on how much you invest, you're going to get more and more, which will incentivize you to invest more. Right. And so 250,000 at 6%, 500 gives you 7, or I'm just saying hypothetically, you add a point to every percentage for the amount of money that they give. It's $1 million. You get one higher point of IRR and so on. And these people that he has access to that have really exorbitant amounts of money, they will always invest the highest amounts, and it makes it so that he doesn't have to struggle to get money or people to open up their wallets. I mean, as long as he performs well, that's been his experience. And that's something that I kind of wanted to point out to you guys that are starting funds or doing syndications. It's a good deal to set up a side letter right from the get-go and set it up in such a way so that you can make people, incentivize them, better said, to invest more money by giving them a higher rate of return or internal.
Yeah, in fact, what we've done is, and I realize this, when you're first starting out, well, actually, even if you're not first starting out, but if people haven't invested with you yet, you know, they don't know. Before COVID, we were doing a lot of in-person meetings, and we had this one guy who had just, I can't remember if he heard us on the radio or what, but he came to our meeting, it was very quiet, and he came to us and he said, I like what I'm hearing. I want to start off with your minimum of 50,000. It was in our original fund, because we hadn't even had the other fund yet. I'll put 50,000 in. I said, yeah, absolutely. Go test the waters. You got to make sure we're legit. And we pay every month on that. You can either reinvest it or take the monthly income. And sure enough, after 4 months of seeing his check and getting the newsletter, et cetera, and he understood exactly what was going on, he popped in an extra 1.3 million at the same rate, because back then we didn't have the sidecar letters on that. So I would suggest having people start off small, but let them know, like you said, just so you know, if you put in more money, we'll increase the interest rate for all the money, not just the brand new money. Oh, that was the other thing, is that, so our main fund has a one-year hold. We're investor friendly, very investor friendly. That's the other thing, is be very, very investor friendly. So if somebody puts in, let's say January 1st, they put in $100,000. And then in November, they add another 50,000. That 50,000 doesn't start a new clock. We'll let them take the entire 150 out on January 2nd. So that there's only been a 2 month hold on that extra 50,000 they put in. The very first time you put money with us, that starts the clock running.
Okay. So, and then these funds, you're mentioning different time frames, you know, 1 year, 2 year, 5 years. Yeah. I'm not sure which ones you're using. So when you're wrapping up the fund, do you just launch another fund, or what is that all about?
How does they've been open evergreen.
So they're evergreen.
Yeah.
Okay.
All of them.
And then when you say 1 year, you're saying, hey, your investment is going to be in this, and then in 1 year, we're going to get you your money back? Or?
No. That means that after 1 year, you can request your money at no penalty. So if you invest, let's say if you invest January 1st and we have a 1 year hold,
I see. Okay.
And they want to get out in June, there's a 3% early withdrawal penalty.
But they can still pull out, which is a nice option some people would like to have.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, nobody's pulled out in the first year. Again, 1 year goes really fast. And then after 1 year, they just, at that point, they can take their money out at any time. They have to give us either 30 or 60 days notice for that fund.
Very interesting. Okay. So talk to us about how you raise capital. What do you do to promote yourself and promote your products and your funds?
So we have, I've got two radio shows. One's the one that you're on, you were on, which was the Best of Investing. And then I've got a national sports and business show, which really doesn't bring in too much business per se. It's just kind of a nice little feather in the cap. But the radio show, it's kind of interesting because even though we're on a smaller station, it's kind of a nice thing to have on your resume. People hear ooh, you're on the radio. Either I heard you or I know that station, et cetera. So it's kind of cool to do that. And we've also advertised on other radio stations on bigger markets. It gets kind of expensive, but it has been worth it for us. Now, again, it depends on what kind of fund. We spent a lot of money going to some family offices and when they had their big symposiums. And the problem was we were too conservative. We weren't getting a high enough return. these guys were going, yeah, we won't invest unless we get at least a 15% rate of return. Well, you're not going to get that with us because we're just into giving people a higher rate of return than they could normally get in really ultra-conservative investments.
I found a wide variety of people that go to these types of family office events where you hear, particularly from my partner, Richard C. Wilson, he likes to talk about people.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, Richard. Yeah.
Family offices are much more interested in wealth preservation than they are in these huge returns. But other people that I've run across, they're like, why would I invest for anything less than 15%? I know some people that are like, they have booths or they're vendors at these events. And they offer, like, one of my friends is in it. He has a cannabis syndication company and he's offering like 7%. And some people are like, why would I invest 7%? Yeah. And then other family officers are like, yes, sir, I'll give that to you all day long because we are just trying not to lose any money. So
I have met both. The big problem that we had at the time was the law was being changed with regard to California taxes, the SALT, as they call it. And so we were in California and a lot of these guys were out of California and they go, why would I want to go to California? I don't want to pay California taxes and then not be able to deduct it on my federal return. So that kind of knocked us out of the ballpark on that.
And then so your debt funds are, some people like real estate syndications because there's cost segregation and bonus depreciation and other 1031 tax deferred and some other tax sheltered environments that you can use to get into syndications. Is there anything like that in any of the funds that you do?
Only if we have, on the rare occasion, a foreclosure, but then we're turning around and flipping it. The problem that I've seen so many times with ownership, you know, where you own the real estate, it's not very liquid. The operators are mostly for themselves and then, okay, investors, you get what you get type of thing. It's just, it's kind of a mindset type of thing. And I like where there's liquidity. I really do. And one of the other things that some people do is they do a fund to funds.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is now you start getting into other states and you get into so many of them and the K-1s come so late that you can just tell your accountant, hey, I'm not going to be filing my tax return until October automatically. And it gets very, very complicated. And then again, you're kind of whittling things down because now there's more, yes, you're spreading the risk, but now everybody's getting a little bit extra of that piece of pie. I'm not saying they can't work, but you're already kind of taking two steps back when you're entering these things. So I personally don't like to do a fund of funds.
Cool. Very fun. We didn't really get to talk too much about raising capital. It's time to jump into the lightning round. This is a fun part of the show. Let me start with this. What's the best vacation you've ever taken?
I like Hawaii, so any Hawaii vacation.
Favorite book of any kind?
I'd say the Bible because it's a living, breathing. It never ends.
Tell me the craziest thing that you've seen during your travels.
Okay, so I just off the top of my head, I remember being in Italy and watching this one guy be a beggar. And he walked as though he had this really bad limb, disabled. First thing I noticed was it's like he had shaved except for his mustache. So I'm thinking, okay, where does a beggar get shaving instruments? And then he's wearing a shirt that looked like it was worth at least $200. And he's standing outside at one of the churches that people go to visit. He's just kind of standing there begging. And then, of course, after nobody's given him money, he just kind of runs away.
Oh, that's kind of a weird charlatan.
Oh, but I got to say, well, one thing I did, which is kind of funny, in the same trip, we were exchanging our train tickets. And so for a joke, what I did was I had my hat. I made a sign saying, need money to upgrade to first class. And I held out my hat and shake it around to see if people would donate to it. And nobody wanted to even look at me. Hilarious. Except one guy. He just kind of laughed.
All right. Favorite childhood memory?
Okay. Well, when I was 19, I won a major bowling tournament when I was semi-pro. That was a good memory for me.
How fun. What do you love best about being a father?
Seeing how awesome my kids are.
Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
I try to put myself, as I'm talking, I'm listening to myself. And I'm trying to put myself in the other person's head as they're listening to what I'm saying.
Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I really try to do what's best for the client. And I think that comes across. You know, people do business with people they trust.
Yes.
That's a major, major thing. So if you are trustworthy and it comes off as being trustworthy, and you know, people, they do business with people they like.
Very good. All right. So a couple more questions here. What do you love best about taking cruises?
So you only have to pack once. every day when you wake up, you're in a different port. It's safe from the standpoint that you're not traveling around all these weird places without at least a good home base. I love the entertainment, love the food. I love that it's fairly structured and that they usually have a good gym on board.
Two questions left. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
When you say a miracle, I've had situations where one would look and say, there's no possible way this could really happen unless there was intervention. So just even things like buying our house, where we were told there's no way that you're going to get this house. And yet both my wife and I said, you know what? God said we're actually going to get this house. Now, in my mind, it was, well, maybe God's given us this house, but it's going to be 30 years from now, right? He didn't give us a timeline. But I go, that wouldn't really make sense. Well, we were told this back in 1992, there's no way you're going to get this house because it already fell out of escrow twice. And the last time that they accepted, they wanted to make sure it was an all cash offer and it was absolutely done. And so we just said, okay, well, it is what it is. But both of us were kind of like, I mean, we looked at 30 houses and this was the one house that we both said, you know what? We both came away saying, this is going to be our house. So about 2 weeks later, real estate agent calls me up and says, guess what? You're getting the house. I said, that's impossible. How? He says, well, as it turns out, the buyer was going to be a church down the street. And there was something in the bylaws that said that they weren't allowed to buy a house. They weren't allowed to own property in this area. And so it was just one of those things that we got.
Very interesting. Our last question.
What was it? Okay, so it was a miracle. Oh, a near-death experience?
Yeah,
either. I think about how this could have been the situation. So I have a motorcycle. It's a scooter, but it can go on the freeway, so it's considered a motorcycle. And I was in what I would consider the heaviest traffic I'd ever seen, going from Marin County over to Oakland. There were 10 times more trucks than there were cars. And being in California, you can split lanes. And so I thought, okay, this is great, I can split lanes. But I was having a hard time trying to find a place I could split. I went in between two semi trucks. And about halfway through, I'm realizing, holy smokes, if either one of these guys just moves over about 6 inches, I'm gonna be an Edward sandwich. That was a little, I was gonna say, it's only near death because it could have been. But okay. I'm sure they look and they go, who is this idiot? But, okay,
hilarious. Last question brought to you by Shiana Amigo, one of our great listeners. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
Besides better than I found it.
That's good.
I really try to do well for people. I try to give them a meaning for life. And listen, I was brought up Jewish and I accepted Christ in 1984. And now I realize there's more to life than life. It goes beyond life. We're all going to live forever. It's just a matter of where.
Good stuff. I love the lightning round. Thanks for entertaining us on that part of the show. Shout out to the Capital Razor Nation, to my company, Legacy Acquisitions, and to our sponsors, Good Egg Investment Syndication, Pro Apartment Educators, The Family Office Club, and PitchDecks.com. Get $1,000 off some great programs for our sponsors at CapitalRazorShow.com. And for those of you in the Capital Razor Nation, please leave us a 5-star written review. Thank you very much for listening in. Edward, how does the audience get a hold of you, brother?
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
I'm not done yet, brother.
Okay, just you can email me, edward@pacificprivatemoney.com.
So how do they find your radio show? Is it possible to listen to that from the other side of the country or no?
Yes, it is. iHeartRadio carries it, all the major ones. So two radio shows, The Best of Investing and Sports Econ 101. And if you Google those two, you will find us.
Okay, very cool. All right. So last question of the day. Do you have any parting words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or fund manager as they scale in their business?
Always look to what is best for the investor. Just shoot for that and everything else will fall in your lap.
And you mentioned that in the lightning round too. So that's very good. All right, cool, Matt. This has been a lot of fun, man.
Thank you very much
for coming on here, breaking down some funds. Debt funds is not something, I don't think I've ever interviewed anybody on this. So this has been a lot of fun and very interesting information. Thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. My pleasure.